Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves, presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp for your chance to win a $200 tattered cover gift certificate. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
Well, first of all, thank you all for coming this evening. I really appreciate it that you took the time out to care about this story. So I thank you for that. This is a book that I really never wanted to have to write. You know, if there was no book, then that would mean that Charles was here. But after he died, I found that I couldn't just bury him and go back to work. I tried to do that, and I ended up going to my bosses and saying, I need more time off. I had to do something with my grief. I had to do something for me. I had to do something for my son. And the only thing I could think of to do was to write. And this started because I was assignment editor for national news at the New York Times. And whenever we hit a milestone of number of American soldiers dead in the war, 1,000 or 2,000, 3,000, most newspapers and TV stations use that, TV networks use that as an opportunity to reflect on the year. Usually take that's about a year since the war, the last time they measured sort of public sentiment in the war and also what has or has not been accomplished. And we were going to do the same thing. We were going to do a series of stories when we came on the number 3,000. And I was actually in charge of assigning that series. And so I said to my bosses, you know, I'm probably the only national reporter in the country who has lived through this experience, and I'd like to try to write something about it. And also because of the journal, I wanted people to know about this amazing gift that Charles left for our son. But I said to my editors, I'm not sure I can do it. I'll attempt it, but, you know, don't hold me to it. Well, with the help of a really good editor, I was able to write a piece that ran. I had no idea they were going to run it on the front page, but they did, of the paper, and the response was really overwhelming. And people wanted to know more, and so I decided to write the book. And I wrote it for three reasons, I think, primarily. The first was, as I said, I just needed something to do to help me deal with this. And when you're feeling, you know, pain and anger and fear, essentially the elements of grief, you know, you have two choices, either do something positive or something destructive. And I wanted to do something positive. And I thought, if I'm able to do this, I will create something for Jordan, a way for him to better know his father, a way for him to understand me and our relationship and the sacrifice that his father made for our country. So that's what I set out to do, and that's why I literally wrote the book to my son. Every chapter starts, Dear Jordan. And there is nothing that keeps you honest and humble and authentic than writing to your own child. And that's another reason I wanted to do this, just to be mindful that while I was going to be sharing this with a lot of readers, the ultimate reader was Jordan. The second reason I wrote it is I wanted people to connect with a soldier, because I knew from editing many of the stories for our newspaper that people tended to think of the soldiers as collective casualties of war or the troops. And I thought, if I put a name and a face and a story and a history and a family behind one soldier, maybe people in this country who don't know soldiers would start to think of them as people. I think sometimes people think of soldiers as folks who don't have many opportunities in life and they go in the army or other branches of the service as a last resort. And that wasn't true in Charles's case, and it's not true in so many other cases. And in fact, I interviewed a great number of his troops for the book, and they're in there. And I think I was really trying to broaden the way people think about soldiers. Lastly, I thought our story is the ultimate example of the importance of speaking to your loved ones, letting them know how you feel, and making sure that nothing is left unsaid. We did that. And it's interesting, you and I were talking, this lady's husband's a soldier, about the fact that, you know, when someone's going off to war, you're forced to confront things and talk about things that you normally put off in life. And literally, Charles and I were preparing for life and death at the same time. We planned to have our child and was preparing for his birth and the possibility of his new life at the same time when we were getting Charles's affairs in order for him to go off to war. And I can't begin to tell you what that was like. But in doing that, one of the things that we made certain of is that we talked to each other and we said and wrote and argued about everything that needed to be worked out and said. And so while this is a tragedy, I have to tell you, there have been some blessings that have come out of it. One of those is obviously my son. He's the greatest blessing. But the fact that at the time of his death, we couldn't think of a single thing more to say to each other. I asked him when he went back to Iraq 6 weeks before he died, can you think of anything to say? And we couldn't, not a word. And so if somebody you love has to leave, what a blessing that there's nothing left unsaid. And so I would just urge all of you, the people you love, you don't have to fill up a journal, but maybe write to your children every year on their birthday with reflections of their year, the year that you spent with them. Record your voice, whatever you're comfortable with. So time isn't promised to any of us. And obviously, it's much different when you're getting on an airplane to go fight a war than it is when you're getting in your car to go to work. But still, time isn't promised, and it's really important to say what you need to say. So anyway, those are the reasons I wrote the book. And what I decided to do was to make it a memoir and incorporate the entries from the journal into the book. And so I say in the first chapter to Jordan, I started writing this when Jordan was 10 months old, and I tell him, I'm writing this for the man you will be. It's written for a man. The journal that his father left him, is actually meant to guide him throughout his life. Charles thought of everything he could think to say to a boy who would never know, might never know him. And so anything that he thought a father might need to say is in there. He told him about the fact that it's okay for boys to cry. He pointed out his favorite scriptures in the Bible. He told him what to look for in a wife. Imagine being in a war, going off to doing your missions during the day and coming home and coming back and writing to your child. I would imagine that in a setting like that, all the fluff, all the unimportant stuff falls away. And what you're left with on the page is what really matters. And that's, I think, what makes this journal in part so special. It's raw, it's authentic, and it's written by someone who had no motive other than to think of what I need to say to my child to be a good father and to impart my values to him. And I do believe that's what makes it so wonderful. Jordan's only two. He knows his daddy wrote a book for him. He knows his mommy wrote a book. But I feel as though, because of this gift that Charles left, I'm not raising this boy alone. You know, I don't know how to teach him to be a man by myself. I can't do that. And that frightens me, you know, sometimes. But I'm really not doing it by myself, because he will be able to open this guide to life, which is what it is, and hear from his father throughout his life. And many of the entries will mean different things at different points in his life. For example, Charles writes to him about sex, which I'm hoping Jordan won't need to read until he's like 40 or 50. But that's in there. He tells him how to handle the breakup with a girlfriend, how you deal with physical pain, how you deal with disappointment. And so those things are going to mean something to one thing to Jordan when he's 8, another maybe when he's 20, and something else maybe when he's 40. But collectively, what he has is this treasure that I am just very happy to share with everybody else. And I'm really proud of Charles, and that's for doing this. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to share it. I actually gave him the journal. I was 5 months pregnant, and he was getting ready to leave for the war. I gave it to him honestly thinking he was just going to jot down a few messages. That's really what I thought, that Jordan would be able to see his handwriting and the words "I love you" from his dad, and I could share that with him one day if his father didn't come back. I got to tell you, he became consumed with this thing. He was writing in it in all of his spare time, and he took it to Iraq with him. When I first gave it to him, he was determined to finish it before he left for Iraq, and the training wasn't going well. He was training his soldiers. It wasn't going well. They were in the desert in California. And he told me that he was having a hard time getting them to wear the equipment because it was so heavy and so cumbersome, and it was hot out there, and they were fainting, they were getting dehydrated, and it was really upsetting him because he thought, you know, if I can't get them acclimated, it's going to be worse when we're in Iraq. It's a lot hotter. So he went through one round of training. He was going to go back and do another, and he came home, and he was working on the journal, and he said, I got to finish this. And I said, why don't you take it with you? And he wouldn't, and I knew he wasn't going to be able to complete it. He went through another round of training. He started working on it again, and he finally one day, I said, you know, you don't have to do this. He wrote on a page, and he closed it, and he said, I think I'll take it with me. And I must tell you, I knew at that moment he was ready to go. And he did take it with him. And he actually said when he was in Iraq that it was therapeutic for him. This was an amazing, a person of extraordinary discipline. He would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in Iraq to go to the gym to work out. Then he'd go out on his missions, and then he'd come back in the night and write to our son. And I learned some of this from his soldiers when he was away. Now, I have a gym in the second floor of my building I can't even drag myself to. The thought of going and working out before you go out on these exhausting and often deadly missions is just incredible to me. The other thing that's remarkable is that there are a couple of occasions, and I'm going to share a couple of the entries with you, where he used experiences, situations during the war as opportunities to write to Jordan about honor and character. To me, they're among the most powerful entries in the journal, that he would be experiencing something in Iraq and then come back and write about that and try to give a broader perspective about what this means, about life and about how you should live and about your character, I think is extraordinary. So that is how the journal came to be. And people always say nice things about someone when they pass away. But I think by sharing some of the entries with you, you will see that he really was an extraordinary man. And I'll tell you, I write in the book in no uncertain terms that he was not a saint. He could be moody. He put his military career before our family quite often. I'm not a saint. Our relationship wasn't perfect. It really wasn't. And I tell Jordan in the book that I don't want him to think that he could not live up to his father's example. But he was a good, honorable, and decent man, and he loved this country very much. And I asked him, before he went to Iraq, I said two things. We didn't discuss the politics of it a lot, but I said to him, is it worth it? Not this war, but the risk of losing your life in combat. And he never hesitated. He said, absolutely, it's worth it. The other thing I said, well, he was a first sergeant, which is the second highest rank for a non-commissioned officer, and he was in charge of 105 soldiers, many of them quite young. Many of them had been in high school the year before. And I asked him, I said, what is your job exactly? What will a typical day be like for you in Iraq? He said to me that he would be responsible for everything from making sure his soldiers got their mail to recovering their bodies. And literally, he did both when he was there. What I'd like to do is share some passages from the book, journal entries, with you and tell you some of the story behind each of the entries that I'm going to read. And then I just would like to open up for questions because I'd really like to hear what you all have in mind. This first entry I'm going to share with you reflects something that I noticed when I received the journal. Let me tell you a little bit about receiving the journal. He sent it to me about 3 months before he died, and he sent it incomplete. One of his very young soldiers had been killed. And Charles had to go and recover the young man's body from a tank. And it shook him up, and it got him thinking about his mortality. And so he called me, and he said, I'm going to send the journal to you. It's not done yet, but I'm going to send it to you because there's enough in here that if something happens to me, Jordan will know me. And then he came home 6 weeks before he died. It was the only time he met Jordan. He was home for 2 weeks, and he literally finished the journal, I think, the last night before he went back to Iraq. Themes come through in the journal. When I sat down and read it in one setting, and first of all, Charles was a very humble and shy man, and he didn't talk very much. So to get this journal where he's writing about the beauty of rainbows and, you know, writing about courtship and love was just incredible. He writes about his first kiss, and so that was amazing to me. But there are themes. And I don't think they were intentional. I don't think he ever knew that there were themes that came through in the journal. One of them was his profound respect for God and the power of prayer in his life. He writes, I would say, about 6 or 7 entries about that and sharing his favorite Bible verses with Jordan. Another of the themes that comes through over and over is that he absolutely was convinced that being in the military was a calling for him, and there was nothing in life he wanted to do more. And he was very proud to be a soldier. The third theme, and I knew this somewhat, but he probably writes about this actually more than anything in the book, is an incredible respect for women. And he lets Jordan know in no uncertain terms what he expects from him in terms of how you treat a lady. This is one of those entries. And I also share it sort of selfishly because, well, you'll see. I expect a woman to be honorable, to take care of herself, and take pride in how she looks and carries herself. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I expect a woman to be a great communicator who will guard and cherish your friendship first. I expect a woman to be intellectually stimulating, no matter what her background may be. Look at your mother. That will tell you what I like in a woman. Now, do I know how to pick them? When I read that, you know, sometimes when I'm overcome still with grief and sad, I'll read through the journal. And when I read things like that, I feel like he's still flirting with me. So that's a nice one. This is another one that hits on two things that I wanted to tell you about. One, again, it goes back to the themes and about women. But the other thing I'll share with you is that Charles and I had quite a big argument, probably the biggest argument we've ever had in our ever had. I still talk as though he's still here, but that we ever had in our relationship was over his decision not to come home when Jordan was born. He had promised me he was coming home, but he had only been at the war for 3 months, and many of his soldiers were still very scared. They were just getting acclimated, and he called me 3 weeks before my due date to say he just couldn't leave them. And I was devastated, and I was really angry. I didn't have a plan B. And now I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have a baby in 3 weeks. What am I going to do? Well, we worked through it. We did. And while that was a very difficult thing, I ultimately understand his decision. I wish he had not made that decision, but I understand it. And I just think, again, it is an example of the kind of sacrifice that military families make every day, most of them without having a book written about them. Charles was just one soldier. There are so many others, but this is what he wrote to Jordan about that. I could not be at your birth because of the war, but you were surrounded by strong women when you were born. All of these women embody the reasons you should never, ever disrespect or lay your hand against a woman. Remember who taught you to speak, to walk, and to be a gentleman. These are your first teachers, my little prince. Protect them, embrace them, and always treat them like a queen. Women with outward beauty are a dime a dozen, but being with a woman with these qualities of loyalty, trust, and caring for who you really are will have a lot more meaning. Never listen to your friends. Follow your heart and look for the strength of a woman. I just think that's unbelievable. And to think that when my son is growing up and starting to think about dating, that these will be some of the things he will consider is wonderful. And I'll try to teach him the best I can, but both of his parents are doing it together. So I mentioned to you about Charles having had the fortitude of writing off of experiences that were happening in combat. And here's one of them. The first entry that I'm going to read to you is from the journal. The second is from a letter that he wrote to me. And they're about the same experience. And I just think that so few of us get a view into what soldiers think and experience in combat, that this really reflects that. The 1st of May, we lost our first soldier. It was very sad. Everyone cared about Corporal Robbie Light. We had a get-together that night before the memorial so that everyone could have a chance to speak about how he lived. The soldiers had some of the wildest stories to tell about Robbie. We laughed and smiled, thinking about the crazy things he would do to make us laugh. That was a healing night, a chance to say farewell to a fallen soldier. Laughter is great medicine for the soul. And this is what he wrote to me. I know you've heard the bad news. It was something I hoped I would never have to experience. It has been a rough 2 months. This week has been the most painful thus far. I can't begin to tell you. Today is a tough day for my company. We had a memorial for one of my soldiers killed in action. I'm dealing with it. You would be proud of me. It's hard talking on the phone. You can't say everything you want to say because of all the restrictions. Yes, we've been in a lot of pain lately. Everybody in the battalion has been supportive. I'll be glad when this week is over. I knew when my soldiers came to my room and knocked on my door that night that I would have to face the inevitable. Would I be able to handle it was the question. Don't worry. I did above and beyond. The memorial was the toughest, but we pulled through and gave our fallen comrade a good send-off. Don't you worry about me. I have a great company. We will keep the memory of our friend with us as we continue on with our missions. Along those same lines, another entry from combat that he wrote to Jordan. And it's going to be interesting to me when my son reads these, because the war will be long over. It'll be history. But there will be lessons here that only he will have from his father about fortitude and about honor. And this is one of them. The 18th was a long, solemn night. We had a memorial for two soldiers from another company who were killed by an improvised explosive device. None of my soldiers went to the memorial. Their excuse was that they did not want to go because it was depressing. I told them it was selfish of them not to pay their respects to two men who were selfless in giving their lives for their country. Things may not always be easy or pleasant for you. That's life. But always pay your respect for the way people lived and what they stood for. It's the honorable thing to do. So those are the kinds of things that Jordan has to look forward to in terms of hearing from his father about values. And I'm grateful that we have this gift of the journal, but I'm also grateful to be able to share it with all of you. Thank you very, very much for coming. Thank you.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we've been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp for your chance to win a $200 Tattered Cover gift certificate and learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.